Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Yesterday was non-contact. Today was contact. He looked like he got through the game really well. So I'm not really feel if tomorrow's a good day, there shouldn't be any restrictions on him playing.
That is the words of Lindy Ruff with a hint of German on Rasmus Dahlin. And with that, the Sabre, Marty, I feel like this, I don't want to say I'm concerned about you in this situation. I'm concerned for all of us in this situation. It's like squirrel, right? We have so many directions to look right now. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to talk about. We could talk Dahlin. We could talk the hype that's going on in Munich, but the Sabres are preseason perfect after procuring a pair of points in Pittsburgh again last night.
You so sound like my old trainer in midget AAA. I was on a terrible team. the first 4 years of that franchise was terrible. First preseason game we play my year, we win. We're coming into the room, and this old gentleman, he was the equipment manager, he yells out, 2 points in the bank, guys, 2 points. I'm like, there's no 2 points in preseason. Like, he was so excited, dude. We had gotten 2 points, but it was just preseason. So, yes, they secured a couple of points in Pittsburgh. Like, technically they didn't, but it was a win. But you're right. I was definitely like a dog, like chasing squirrels and leaves and whatever yesterday. I was watching, you know, the Sabres game. I had something else on the – I had the Yankees-Orioles game on the TV. I had the Sabres game on the computer. Mm-hmm. I was social media, like, when did they leave? And then they put pictures of them getting to the plane. I'm all, look at the boys. They're all excited. Oh, it's raining. Looks like snow. Like, my brain was so scattered. And then we wake up today because the Sabres got there. It's already, you know, late in the early evening, late afternoon over there. I would say more early evening. And, you know, the Sabres have practiced. The Sabres have met the media. Lindy's talking about how Lindy Ruff, Rasmus Dahlin has been pushing hard, and he's non-contact. So I'm like, oh, great news. But then I'm like, oh, wait, I still got to do my review and my analysis of last night's game. Like, I'm all over the place today. Is it Wednesday?
Yeah, and Dahlin obviously is the big story from Europe right now. You know, ready to go, seemingly, which... based on how yesterday's practice ended, and you'll recall we were mentioning it briefly, just how hard he was pushing at the end of yesterday's, you know, two-part session for the main group before they traveled out. And so certainly not surprised at today's development and progress for Dahlin based on what we were seeing the last 2 days, but yesterday specifically. So that's fantastic. And then, you know, the only thing that was missing from last night's preseason game, as far as I could tell, is an empty netter, which we joked about yesterday, and they could have used it because the margin of victory was a little smaller last night. But that being said, my favorite part of everything that happened might have been seeing Amerks head coach Michael Leone say that that was Noah Ostlund's best game, including Prospects Challenge, including the scrimmages in camp. And these are great steps because we can't talk about everybody every single day. But when one more of these younger players comes up and, you know, grabs the opportunity, which last night and the remaining three preseason games in North America are going to be, it's awesome to hear good things about Ostlund and Wahlberg and on.
Oh, it was great to hear. I thought Anton Wahlberg was fantastic. And I mentioned him on the show yesterday as a guy that impressed me in the scrimmages. Mm-hmm. And you see the size. And so, yeah, he had a goal, obviously, but his presence was felt in the game. Noah Ostlund was really good as well. He stood out to me. Funny enough, Konstantin Alanis would have had an empty net goal. But he missed it from 40 feet out. He, like, I don't know. He uses very little tape on his stick, right? He just has the little bit of white tape on the toe, and he probably didn't get in a sweet spot, and the thing shanked about 5 feet wide of the net from 40 feet out, and even it led the Phil Bork, the old 2-9er in Pittsburgh, to be like, oh, boy, he missed it from 40 feet out. Like, that's the Sabres' first-round pick last year. Kind of like surprise, but hey, yes. You know what? Empty netters in preseason are nowhere near empty netters in regular season. So Kunst is going to hit them in the regular season, I'm pretty sure, when he gets going. But mm-hmm. He had some moments that were really good for me. And then there were some moments that I was like, okay, like, you're still young. You still have a lot to learn. So that's great. That's what it's for. But wasn't the best thing about last night for me the fact that even though this team did not have their main guys, because the main guys are all in Europe right now, the hard work was at the same level. It's like the guys set the tone in the first two games saying, this is how it's going to be. The Power and the Thompson and the Cousins and the Lafferty line, whatnot, they set the tone in the first two games. And now yesterday, it was hard work everywhere. And I was so impressed with that.
What happened on the first goal? Was it not eerily reminiscent to the first Sabre goal the other night against Pittsburgh?
Like the deflection by Slager and the shot by Metz.
You have Jack Quinn shooting. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then last night it was Metz. But the reason it started was because Nadeau did a terrific job winning the battle down low.
Yep.
And Brendan Warren, who is always going to be in that same position down low, did the work to get it back. Both Warren and Nadeau are right there in front of the net, just like Tuck and Thompson were on that Paterka tip from Quinn, right? Like, it's just, and then, so there's that exact consistency that you're talking about. And then on the next goal, and I don't want to get too far ahead, but if we're going to keep trying to focus on the little things and where Buffalo can be better and things that would irk any coach, let alone Lindy, who has talked about not wanting to take penalties.
Yes.
But also, sometimes things like offsides can feel just like penalties. It's like, why did we do that to ourselves, right? Mm. Don't be lazy. Pay attention to detail. Make sure you do everything not to negate a potential scoring rush. That's what happens on the next one. Nikita Novikov is leading the breakout.
Yep.
But there's a broken play in the neutral zone. Watch Kisikov stay on side. He did. This could have been a nothing forgotten moment. Big deal. Nothing happens going through the neutral zone. He's not a big guy. He had to stretch hard to get there. And then all of a sudden, Novikov lets a laser go bar down. Like,
and Novikov was on my list of players that I was really happy to see. Him and Metsa played really well together, but Novikov, like on the first goal, the Slager goal, he's kind of like, you mentioned Thompson on the first Paterka goal against Pittsburgh, the first preseason game. Like, he left the left point because it's a power play and snuck in the back door. Novikov, seeing his buddy that's about to shoot the puck, has the trust in Metsa that he's going to get it through, because if you don't get it through, then I can't go to the front of the net. Mm-hmm. And he snuck at the back door and it got deflected, but he would have been there for any rebound. And you had, you know, Nadeau and Warren at the front of the net. Like, you had lots of bodies, but the physicality in Novikov was definitely on display last night. The the skill set, and he's never going to be the guy that's going to wow you with his skill set, because he's more about his size and like being strong. But I thought there was a lot that he showed. I was really, really excited and happy to see what it looked like for Novikov in that game. Not just scoring a goal, but other moments in the game where he really stood out for me.
Right. And then with the winning goal, which you already talked about from the Wahlberg standpoint, it was a good power play zone entry later on in the power play, but it was still a good pursuit of the puck by Oslin. But one of the, or the key player in all of it was Tullio. No,
was Tullio did the play. Yes.
He did the digging and then he got himself in a position to take the shot, which ricocheted right there to a perfectly positioned Wahlberg. It's a multi-point game for Tullio, and he is going to likely be the least talked about among Rochester's maybe top nine forwards, right? But he has an opportunity coming over in the McLeod deal to maybe, like, and especially now, like, we don't know how the start of the season is going to unfold and how long Buffalo is going to keep X amount of players. But if they end up keeping 14 forwards for a while, right? Let's just say they go 14
and 7. That's the norm. 14, 7, and 2.
But there's a lot of people that think they're going to keep the eight defensemen because they're not going to want to risk Bryson or Gilbert on waivers. But anyway, that's a discussion for another day. Yeah. I think there's major opportunity here if, you know, Jiří or Rusak or whomever is up with the Sabres. There's a really good opportunity for Tulio to continue his development at the AHL level, mm-hmm. and presumably with some very skilled players, like he found himself in that power play situation with Oslin and Wahlberg, right? So
I was mentioning Roseanne because I thought on the power play, a couple of zone entries, he did a really good job of drawing players to him, going through the middle and then mm-hmm. kicking it outside. And that's something that I like when the Sabres do it, either with a Dahlin or a Thompson. You come through the middle, let the two defensemen converge on you, and then kick it outside, and now you have time to set. I thought Roseanne did that a couple of times. And on the Wahlberg power play goal, he did it earlier in the power play, and then they had change, and Tulio was the one on the puck. But again, like, it was hard work. It was tenacity. It was standing in front of the net. It's get a puck to the net and get a rebound. Like, nothing special. It wasn't big one-timer set plays or anything. It was just a hard-working goal. And that mm-hmm. was, I'm telling you, like, if Pittsburgh thought that the big guys worked hard on Saturday night in a bit of a mismatch with roster, mm-hmm. then you needed a response by Pittsburgh yesterday saying, hey, we still don't have Crosby and Malkin and Letang and Carlson on the ice and those guys, but you're going to have a chance to be on the same level playing field mm-hmm. and just show your hard work. Well, Pittsburgh got blown out in the hardworking department. That, to me, like, and I know the third period, they pushed a little bit more. Pittsburgh did. Mm-hmm. And got to give credit to Michael Hauser, who did a really good job in the first two periods, and Scott Ratzlaff, who looked really good in the third period, his first ever NHL preseason action. Like, that was incredible. Mm-hmm. But Pittsburgh didn't match the work ethic. Buffalo's mm-hmm. work ethic was higher, and that's the reason why they won the 3-2 game.
Penguins smoked the Sabres on faceoffs last night, for what it's worth, so put that in your preseason pipe.
Oh, it always balances it out. Like, in the first game of the season, the preseason, I think the Sabres were like 70% or something.
Yeah, but I'm happy for the goaltenders. Obviously, we've seen four of them now wearing the blue and gold over the course of the first three games, and they've all found similar success based on how the group has been playing in front of them. Look, it was 2-2, and only a couple of minutes later, Buffalo got that bounce-back goal, got right back in the lead, and I just think from a flow standpoint, if you were casually watching, like, you just didn't see panic. You didn't see ridiculous sequences where it was over and over and over of the opposition pressing your defense into bad positions. So good on Michael Leone and company for really getting that group to play in a very similar fashion to what the Sabres had in the first two. And now here we are. We've got four games left in the preseason, including one for the main group, which is in Germany, and it's on MSG and, of course, WGR Sports Radio 550 on Friday. But in the meantime, you have tomorrow night's game, you have Saturday night's game, and then back home for the final preseason game for the group that we saw last night. So a quick overview on, I guess, big picture expectations here over the next the regular season starts a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
So what is your outlook here over the final four preseason games, both in Europe and here in the U.S. or in North America, I should say?
They're almost two different things, right? Because mm-hmm. my outlook for the club that is in Germany right now is, okay, well, if Dahlin plays, who does he play with? Because sure. when we saw yesterday from the practice and the scrimmage, almost looked like Dahlin and Jokiari were going to be together. The fact that Power and Byram played well together mm-hmm. in the first two preseason games. So maybe there's new defense pairings just because of the injury to Dahlin that did not have Dahlin and Power play together. It was Byram and Power, and now maybe Dahlin gets himself paired up with Jokiarju. So that's something to watch for on Friday. But my expectation is Lindy Ruff is going to roll out his roster. Like, what is going to be on the ice Friday for the last preseason game is going to be, in my opinion, what we would see against the New Jersey Devils on October 4th, that Friday afternoon. So that's the expectation. There's not two or three games. There's not scrimmages because there's not enough body to scrimmage a full scrimmage. You may do, you know, some scrimmaging inside certain situations, but you're not going to have a full, you know, three lines and five defensemen and three lines and five defensemen play for an hour. That's not going to happen. So the only game action they will really feel is Friday against Red Bull Munich. And so that's the expectation. Who plays Friday? Probably the way that Lindy Ruff wants the team to play the next Friday.
You have repeatedly, hilariously reminded us of nine goals against in preseason play for you against against a Swiss team. So realistically, knowing whatever the situation was with you and the Rangers then in that moment, meaning where that team was at.
Yeah, we were four games in 5 days, and that was the fourth game. And Coach Tortorella walked in the room before he says, "We should never have scheduled this game. I just hope nobody gets hurt." Like, so that was the situation. It's not the same thing Friday.
Exactly. And the team is in a completely different situation. So, what should one expect Friday afternoon in Germany?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a unique experience. My brother played 2 years in Germany. Frankfurt and Hamburg,
but not the ancillary. Like, but what should we expect from the Sabres in this? Because I think everybody's
that
like
unique experience is going to bring energy way up. I think the Sabres
be there already. Though, sorry, I don't want to. I just, you know me and cliches. Like, I just hate the, oh my god, it's so hard to play in a certain barn or this does
no,
this.
No, but I think this is different. Like, there's an excitement level. Like I said, when you play four games in 5 days in Europe, it doesn't matter if you're playing in Zug and there's like a standing only section with flags and drums and fireworks. Like, our energy level was low. Like, we're like, what are we doing? Like, this is different. So for me, it's just about, okay, if you were thinking that the Sabres would look at that game as we play Red Bull in Germany, you know, let's get through this game so we can start the regular season. I don't think that's what the plan is. The plan is, hey, this is going to be fun. Hey, let's show up. Let's go. Let's do the same thing we did in those first two preseason games with the main group. Let's continue to build on it. And I think they'll have a little bit more practice time to work on certain things now. A good practice tomorrow, a game Friday, more practice time. They'll continue to fine-tune some of the details. But for me, I think it's going to be I hate to say they're going to compete. Everybody should compete, whatever. I just feel like it's going to be enhanced because it's going to be a fun experience personally.
Good. I hope so. Anything else around the NHL world? Preseason play last night. We might resume off-season team of the day in the next
half. We're going to have to at some point because we got four teams left and we're running out of time.
The fan bases of those four teams are killing us on social media.
You know, the PR for the Washington Capitals is going to call us like, you guys didn't do us in team of the day. I'm feeling like slighted by that. So we're going to try to do our best.
But anything from last night, obviously.
Craig Berube was asked a really funny question. I don't know if you saw it on social media, but the Leafs lost to Ottawa again. They lost 6-5 and 2-1. And the question was, is there time to press a panic button? Two losses God. In preseason. Craig Berube looked over. He goes, "It's preseason," and it was very, very comical. It's making the runs this morning. That was comical. The Islanders and the Rangers played a barn burner of a game at MSG last night when the Islanders were up 4-2, just to see the Rangers score four unanswered to win at 6-4. Varlamov played the first half, and then they had Shesterkin and Quick play each a half in the Rangers side. So the second half was not as good.
What's your concern level for Sorokin with the Islanders?
Not concerned yet. because I really think that the New York Islanders and Patrick Waugh, not saying that he has a liking for Varlamov, but he knows Varlamov better from his time in Colorado and now with the Islanders last year, giving him playoff games. So I think it's almost going to be less messy for the Islanders if Sorokin is to miss a little bit of time and then Varlamov starts. And then after that, Sorokin comes in and gets readjusted. So you're kind of almost putting that narrative of, well, who's your number one? Who's not? Right. Like Sorokin, Varlamov. So I'm not concerned yet. It's kind of like Vancouver with Thatcher Demko, which we may talk about in our team of the day. Not concerned yet. But if it lingers and it becomes a problem, then the identity of the Islanders with their two goalies is going to, you know, be dumped off the side of the road.
Linus Ullmark has not been as active in the early days of camp as Ottawa probably would have liked for their number one. He tweaked something, but he's fully expecting to play, of course, against Buffalo tomorrow. So what are your expectations there?
I think Linus Ullmark could be a problem, not for the Ottawa Senators, but for the rest of the Atlantic Division. I think he's that good. I really like the way that he played. And mostly because he was good with Buffalo. And obviously there was the contract situation. He goes on to Boston, plays well in Boston. Swayman kind of takes over. They trade Ullmark. Then he's got a chip on his shoulder coming back, you know, into that Ottawa, like, you know, we really need to make a push, but I think Ottawa's got a good team. And I think Ullmark last year with Ottawa would have maybe given a chance for Ottawa to be a playoff team. They had bad goaltending. They had the 32nd team save percentage. So I think Ullmark, is that bad? Yeah. Well, I had the 33rd team save percentage last year. So if they had the 32nd, you can see how bad that is.
Mark Pesek had a multi-point game last night.
He had a goal.
Was it a butt goal?
No, it wasn't a butt goal, but it was a. I saw in basically scrolling through the box score yesterday that he had scored a goal. I was like,
yeah, he's trying to make a go of it with the Ducks. They had a comeback win against the Sharks last night. So so good for Mark. Vancouver, as mentioned, we'll get to a little bit, but they topped the Kraken last night 3-1. What is your Did we really get into it on our team of the day when we did? Like, what are you thinking Dan Bylsma is going to be able to do with that team? Granted, he's got more firepower to work with, but like, what do you think is going to happen there under Bylsma that didn't happen last year under Hextall?
Well, Maddie Bernier's has got to be better. I mean, that is definitely a big point. I'm trying to get back to
Ryan Lindgren is out now for at least a few weeks.
Yeah, Lindgren has got an injury. There was some injuries around the NHL that, you know, can cause some concern. But I look at the Seattle Kraken, and I think if McCann was all right last year with 29 goals, but he had 40 the year before, and 62 points was the most they got last year by any player. Like, Matty Bernier should be a 65, 70-point player. McCann should be a 70-plus point player. They got Chandler Stephenson now. They've added some pieces. I think Seattle should be good. Again, is it a panic button level to lose 3-1 in the preseason? No, but I think Seattle should be good.
You usually talk about Montreal. Any takeaways from another victory for them? They've been pretty staunch defensively here in the first couple of games, right?
Staunch defensively. The big story out of Montreal yesterday was the fact that Patrick Laine grabbed the puck in the defensive zone, had a rush up the ice. He dangled a couple of guys and then went around the net, lost the puck, whatever. But the crowd got on their feet and applauded him. Marty St. Louis said, remind me of a Guy Lafleur rush back in the days. And I'm like, okay, pump the brakes here. Let's not get ourselves all Guy Lafleuring Patrick Laine. But it was, you know, it was nice to see Laine enjoying hockey like that again. We talked about Barry Boulay had a good game for his game last night. Who was it? Slavkovsky.
Not last night, the previous against
the previous
Philly.
Slavkovsky looked okay. I mean, Montreal is going to be, look, this is a quote. I heard this somewhere. Montreal is going to be the best last place team in any divisions this year. Like, you look at all the divisions in the National Hockey League, I think they're going to finish 8th in the Atlantic, but they're going to be the best last place team in all the NHL.
Wait a minute. Who was last place in the Central last year?
Well, last year wasn't that Chicago. Yeah, Chicago was terrible. So you had San Jose, Chicago, You had Columbus and you had Montreal.
I mean, they're all bound for significant improvement.
Yes.
Montreal's point gain probably won't be as dramatic as San Jose's or Chicago's. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is an accurate statement. They will probably be the...
But here's the thing. Philadelphia's
I'm also not I'm also not convinced that Montreal's finishing last because, you know, I've been bullish on them for a while. So
I'm a little concerned about the Philadelphia Flyers. And I know it's only preseason, but they've looked like... Blah. Like, I don't know if John Tortorella
ran them through the ringer. It's two preseason games, Marty. It's no time to panic.
It's no time to panic, but I'm looking at the Metropolitan Division. If New Jersey's better and, you know,
that was a Berubism. That was your Toronto Berubism from earlier.
Yeah, but I also think, like, show me something. Show me an effort. Like, I'm going to applaud the Sabres' effort in the three games they played.
Correct.
Rightfully so. If a team doesn't show me an effort on the ice or looks like they're being outclass, then I'm like, that's a question mark.
Well, no questions to be asked here. We know when the Sabres are going to be home from Europe with two games already on the standings. That will be the results that they post from their games against the Devils in Czechia. Then they come home, and it'll be a nice little homestand kicked off on October the 10th. First of 40 home games at KeyBank Center this year for the home opener. You've got the party in the plaza, blue and gold carpet arrivals with the players. Rally towel giveaway for the first 10,000 and the home opener presented by the BFLO store, sabres.com/tickets. We have a pretty high likelihood of getting to Vancouver as our team of the day next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Ich kriege immer viele Fragen jetzt, vor allem jetzt in den ersten, sage ich mal, letzten 24 Stunden von den ganzen Mitspielern auch. Muss ein bisschen viel erklären zurzeit, rund um München alles. Nee, aber es ist super cool, wieder hier zu sein. Ist top für mich, den Jungs so ein bisschen die Stadt zu zeigen.
There's only one player who could do that for the Sabres today, and that was JJ Paterka. And the smile means the level of energy and positivity that typically comes out of his mouth was very much on display in his homeland.
No, he's obviously excited. And I just think of if I had the chance to play a preseason game in Quebec City, you know, that would have been fun. But this is even more different. It's overseas. It's in a different country, different continent. And he basically said, and my Google Translate was not good on this, so I basically got help from the our control room, is that Munich is super cool, and to be back and show the boys a bit of the city, it'll be fun. So that's basically the gist of it. He also talked about how he and his family used to go to the Red Bull game, the Munich game, all the time. Would be in the stands. So to play against his old team is going to be exciting and fun. So, you know, there's one guy that can be speaking German right now, and that's him. But hopefully guys pick up a little German, because when I went to Finland, I picked up a little Finnish. When you travel, you pick up a little something, but did not travel to Germany much.
Is this further proof that speaking in languages that are not English, that it is harder to economize words? Because if your translation is correct, that was a very short description of a long answer. And dare I say, Marty, we often feel this when talking with you. So does
nothing more than when Rocky IV, he beats Drago, and then he's being, you know, he's giving the speech and the Russian translator translate, and he says a long paragraph, and the Russian translator goes da 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 da, and that's it. It was like it was a 5-minute speech that got translated in five Russian words. But yes.
All right, in my ongoing quest to avoid the final four teams of the day here on Sabres Live, I'm going to present to you some German-born Sabre trivia.
Okay.
How many German-born skaters have the Sabres had in franchise history? JJ included.
JJ included. I'm going, I say three.
Unofficially, of course, because I don't have the ability to go through every possible source. So I'm using NHL.com.
Yes.
Nine.
Nine? German. Okay.
Yes, would you like to start naming some of them?
I can name Jochen Hecht. I can name...
Jochen is the scoring leader in Sabres history among German-born players. 345 points in 613 games.
Okay, well, good for Yo-Yo. JJ. Yo-Yo and then JJ Peterka, that's two. Uwe Krupp?
That's three.
That's three. Tobias Rieder?
That's four.
That's four. Christian Ehrhoff?
That's five.
Okay. I said three, but I'm able to name five. Like, figure it out. My squirrel brain, my doggy squirrel brain.
Keep going. I have his gloves from a sale at the Sabres store.
I have his gloves from a sale at the Sabres store?
Within the last 6 years.
Don't know.
Alexander Sulzer.
Oh, Sulzer. Okay. That would have been number nine probably on my list, but okay.
You're not going to get the other ones, so.
So I'm out of it.
No, there's one. There's one, and I always present this as he has the highest points per game for any Sabre who played less than nine games in franchise history.
Okay, I don't know.
He had 4 points in six games. His name is Dominic Cahoon. And if memory serves, he scored in the shootout in his final ever game as a Sabre. COVID hit, and we never saw Dominic.
Well, Dominic Cahoon had a very high qualifying offer and could have gone to arbitration. So the Sabres decided not to qualify and offer him. Mm-hmm. And then he just walked away. So that was a surprise when he wasn't retained on qualifying offer, but I understand why.
He had 4 points in six games as a Sabre. The others are Ron Fisher and Jason Holland. Now, you obviously would remember Jason from...
He's a Canadian-German.
Correct.
But yes.
Yes, he's actually... So this is funny. Because he pops up on the NHL list, but if you click on his bio, it says he was born in Morinville, Alberta.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he had dual citizenship or
whatnot. Of course, but it's not, you know what I mean? Like, this is why you can only play this game to a certain level, because depending on the source that you use...
You know, also, sometimes we'll use like European born or European trained.
Because sometimes which was the whole Stan Mikita thing years ago when he was presented as, you know, the great Czech trained. But it's like, no, what? But he's not like Jager, you know, like
but he played for Canada and the, Canada Cup or Summit Series or whatnot.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
so that's a little bit different.
So there's
your German question
trivia
for you.
Oh,
which
yes,
German
please
goaltender played for the Rochester Americans in the Spindler Cup without being a Rochester Amherst? He was not an Amherst. He just went over for the Spindler Cup.
When was this?
That had to be 96, 95,
okay,
96.
Okay, so hang on. He was German?
Yes, he's technically a German goaltender.
But he wasn't playing for the Amherst at the time. Did he ever play for the Amherst?
I don't believe he did.
Did he play in the NHL?
Yes.
Did he
and
play
he
a lot?
Played many years in the NHL.
Give me one team. Give me one team he played for in the NHL.
The Washington Capitals.
Oh, Kolzig.
Olaf Kolzig actually was playing for the Baltimore. Oh, he actually played 49 games for the Rochester Americans. Sorry. I thought it was just for the tournament, but he did. Like, see how I forget. Mm-hmm. In 92-93, he played for the Rochester Americans, then played Portland Pirates and then Washington Capitals. Yes.
But who was he drafted by?
He was drafted by the Washington Capitals 19th overall.
Why did he end up in
Rochester?
In the 1989
draft.
That predates the change when they were sharing with Florida.
Oh, yes. Very
by
much
a lot.
So.
Yeah, no. So I'm blanking as to why he ended. It must have been alone that year, obviously.
It had to have been alone because that year they had Tom Draper played five games.
But Draper was up mostly with the Sabres that year. That was the year they lost to Boston. Draper was actually in that series in game seven.
Yes.
Sorry. Did you say 92-93 or 91-92?
I said 92-93.
Oh, say Draper played in the game seven in 92. Of course, 93 was the Mayday, with the sweep of Boston. Yeah.
But okay. Olaf Kolzig was, so he's been everywhere. Technically, he's a South African, Canadian, German, and everything.
Okay, we're stalling on Vancouver. I'm going to get there. There are two birthdays in Sabres history today. One has a Vancouver connection. Your teammate, Tony Ludman, 47 today. 371 games.
He's younger than me?
Yes,
Tony Ludman is younger than me.
And better looking, dare I say.
By two months.
371 regular season games as a Sabre, 40 more in the postseason. Now, here's the Vancouver
Best
Buffalo.
Best backhand flip in the world, Tony Lundman. He had the straight height. Blade, and he used to flip it backhand, tried to hit the video scoreboard. I was going to say Jumbotron, but no, he tried to hit every video scoreboard in the league. That was Tony Lundman.
So the Buffalo-Vancouver connection has always been there because they came into the league at the same time. In 74-75, Buffalo's run to the Stanley Cup. Of course, early that season, the two recent expansion teams made a transaction that was very significant because Jerry Meehan and Mike Robitaille went to Vancouver, and Buffalo landed an outstanding defenseman in Jocelyn Gavremont, and they landed, born on this day, 72 years ago, Brian McSheffrey. Okay. Now, that name had never really registered with me in Sabres history. He only played three games with Buffalo in the October of that 74-75 season. Incredibly, he had a standout year the next year with the Buffalo Norsemen of the North American Hockey League. But he never had anything else.
In North Tonawanda.
Right.
That was like, and Bruce Boudreau actually played against the Norsemen in North Tonawanda. Bill Whipper was a young buck.
And he was talking about it last year.
$25 a game taking pictures for the Buffalo News.
Yeah. Pretty wild. Anyway, so there's your Vancouver connection. McSheffrey started his career with Vancouver.
Wow.
Played less than 100 NHL games, but played three with the Sabres in 74-75.
That is definitely
ahead.
A squirrel type of like a segment right now with the direction we've gone.
Don't say I didn't warn you. I had a feeling that it was going to be like this today, and it has been. But it's also preseason, right? Like, so there's a lot of everything. And thank goodness we're not doing this with Shayna. Poor Shayna. We would just be, her brain would be exploding, but probably in the best way, because she'd be wanting to like add layers and layers and layers to everything we're talking about. Vancouver Canucks.
Yes.
Major impressive surge last year under Rick Tocchet. They've had a lot of change. Feel free to detail it. What do you expect from Vancouver this year?
Okay. Well, their identity last year was that with Thatcher Demko in net, they scored almost one more goal per game than without him. Like, they were a free, we're confident in our goalie type of team, and they were sixth in scoring and fifth in goals against. So they had like good season with Besser 40 goals, Miller 100 plus points. But it all was off the confidence that Thatcher Demko really gives them. Demko missed most part of the playoffs. He got hurt in the first round and he's still not back. He has a very unique that no hockey players have ever had to deal with, like a muscle injury. I really don't know. He didn't give much details, but he's working his way back. But the Vancouver Canucks have Artur Shilovs, who played well last year when he had to. Was a bit of a surprise because they had Casey DeSmit last year. So no DeSmit this year. Artur Shilovs is there. And they signed Kevin Lankinen just as an insurance policy this year. So that's in the crease. Everywhere else, there's been a lot of change. No Elias Lindholm. No Nikita Zadorov. No Ilya Mikheyev. No Sam Lafferty. There's been a lot of change. They replaced those guys with DeBrusque, Denton Heinen, Daniel Sprong, Vincent Dernay, Derek Forbert. So, losing Lindholm, Zadorov, Mikheyev, in my opinion, is three big losses. Even though Mikheyev was, there's times, but I feel like that's three big losses for the Vancouver Canucks. Can DeBrusque, I like DeBrusque, but can DeBrusque, Sprong, Heinen, and Dernay be able to give them that level? It's still have to be seen, but, I think the Vancouver Canucks are a good team, but they're not the top of the, the division, in my opinion, right now. They finished first last year in that division. I don't think they're the top of the division right now.
They, full credit, they did advance, but they barely got past Nashville in a series that I would say both teams regret how they played. Like, it was not the best hockey. Vancouver did what they had to, and obviously it was far more pronounced for them.
The series was like 30 right. between the two teams.
But Vancouver was already, as you said, already dealing with the loss of Demko.
Yeah.
So they were not themselves, and Vancouver or Nashville couldn't take advantage of that. And it was a very, very bizarre series. But amidst the core, you just talked about additions and departures. You have Brock Besser, who's had the blood clot issue, right, in the past. Now he's entering the final year of his contract. Had two assists in the preseason opener.
Yep.
Might Jonathan Lekkarimäki make the team? Because a lot of those other players up front, they weren't potentially impactful. What you're hoping is that when you have this kind of turnover as a good team, your farm system can replenish on the fly. Yes. So can they get a meaningful contribution from a rookie like Lekkarimäki? Roenick has partnered perfectly with the now Norris Trophy winning Quinn Hughes.
Yes.
We saw Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua become incredibly impactful depth players for them last year. It was long expected. For Garland, it was an incredible sight to see for Joshua, who is dealing with his own personal health issues that he's had to overcome.
Testicular cancer that correct. He had to have surgery, and he's so not.
This is a lot. Yet. This is a lot, isn't it? Like with the unknown of Demko and with challenging personal health issues from big name players and expectations in a market where they feel a long ways removed from game 7 loss to Boston in 2011. You know, like it was a long road back just to get into the playoffs last year for Vancouver. So this is a fascinating team to really dive deep on, and whether you think they can be close to what they posted last year in the regular season or whether it was a blip and you think they might go the other way. I don't think
So I don't think they're going to go the other way, but I don't think they're going to end up with 109 points like they did last year and be top five or top seven in goals for, goals against. I think this is going to be a bit more challenging for Rick Tocchet and his staff to be able to send Vancouver the right direction. But look at the Pacific Division. The Edmonton Oilers, in my opinion, are the top team in that division. So the Oilers should slide up. The LA Kings, the Vegas Golden Knights should have their say. And like I'm thinking Vancouver could easily be battling for a playoff spot by the end of the year.
I agree.
Just be fourth in the Pacific and hope to get in. That's where Vancouver was first last year in the Pacific, third in the West. I think they dropped from third in the West to potentially eighth this year with how good other teams around have been.
If Vegas doesn't win the division, I think it's a major, major slight against that group. So we'll see how it plays out, obviously.
I have the Oilers, but yes, yeah. I think Vegas should be two.
We should do this Team of the Day stuff more often. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right. Just 90 seconds left in Sabres Live. And I feel like I have to, I don't know. I feel bad, Marty. You didn't make the final rendering in the new Alumni Plaza.
I didn't use my burner account to keep flooding the response by Marty Biron, Marty Biron, Marty Biron. But I do love that this artwork that's going to be put up in Alumni Plaza and the bridge to go to the rink from the parking garage has RJ Aircom, the Buffalo Sabres on both sides. Like that is a good nod wink to RJ and what he used to say all the time. And the 27 players that made the list, they're great picks. They're great picks. They're the history of the Sabres right there and the fan favorites. And I think this is a fantastic mural that's going to be out there that represents a lot of different eras.
Are the White Sox going to win out and remain tied with the Mets for the worst team ever?
Negative. Unless they have triple.
Heck of an effort last night.
Unless they get triple
three
plays
in the eighth
like the
to
Padres
win.
Last night, they're not going to win every game, which the triple play last night to clinch their win to the playoffs was pretty impressive for the Padres. Yeah.
I feel like you're not wanting to give the White Sox proper respect for not succumbing to that record as early as possible.
They will be in the history book.
They will? Okay. It's a shame the Mets aren't home this week because I really wanted them to flash to the out-of-town scoreboard and say,
we're done.